all caps like MF Doom. Cause we use like a thousand elephants in the room. Be my fuse, bro, I'm hot like the human torch. Make your baby mama wanna take me back to court. Make your daddy wanna kick the dog off the porch. Make your uncle wanna go and get another quart. Aboard mission, I'm full of them gamma rays.
Hello and welcome to the I Want More Comics podcast, episode 50. I'm Zach.
50? I thought it was 49.
Say your name.
I thought it was 49.
We're at 50.
It's 50.
You sure?
Yeah.
Can you count?
I can count.
I think you're
Say
insane.
Say your name.
Sean.
That's Sean, and I'm Richie.
It's still, I think it's 49.
It's not.
I might have con lag.
You have con lag.
Now we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
So.
All right.
Yeah, anyway.
We're at episode 50. Yes.
So welcome to the show. We're just going to jump right in tonight, and let's get into the news. So as Sean delicately put it, this past weekend we had Denver Comic Con 2017, and so I was hoping just to have just a couple minutes of us talking about...
So 48.
49 is our episode where we talk about one-shots that really blew us away.
We talked about that?
We sure did.
Stop derailing a conversation, Richie.
It was you. That was me.
So let us talk about Denver Comic Con 2017, the fun things, the cool things we got, had, their experiences, and all that.
I mean, it's quick overview. Again, my favorite part was meeting the publishers.
You now get the fun that we've been going and doing for the last, since we've been a store, is you hang out with the publishers and you hang out with whoever happens to hang out with the publishers, and then you go to dinners and you go, it's all the after party stuff that you get privy to that not a lot of people get privy to.
But again, I will say that I thoroughly enjoy working these cons. I appreciate the feeling of, you know, everyone around me is a geek and looking at geeky things. I think that working at a booth does kind of set up to run into some interesting characters that try to take advantage.
Like that lady that gave you a hug on your face?
There was some random lady that grabbed me and slapped me in the face gently, like she knew me, and I had no idea who she was, so that was interesting. But, no, overall, the sense is, so many of our guests came and got us, they took photos with us and gave us gifts, which was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, our normal customers would show up, and we were the meeting spot for a bunch of people. Right. If friends got lost, just meet at the I Want More Comics booth. Right. It'll be fine.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how it, I know that that's easy for you guys, but it also means a lot to us because it gives us a little sense of home being in that crazy madness that is the Denver Comic Con. It's a crazy house, and I love it. I love every aspect of it. So
yeah, and it was definitely set up a little bit stranger this year because they changed sides of the convention center.
Well, there were two conventions going on, so
we had to be on the front near the main Spear Boulevard, which kind of confused the hell out of a lot of people. But they eventually found us.
Yeah, they found us, and we had that awesome tie-in with Joe Benitez. So.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, Joe Benitez. You guys rarely ever get to see me geek out, and I geeked out a little.
You did. You fanboyed pretty hard.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
So what about you, Sean? What was your favorite part of the con?
My favorite part of the con was going to dinner with Benitez that Friday night, obviously. Yeah. That was...
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because spending 2 hours talking to somebody whose work you admire and just getting to hang out with them and talk about whatever you're talking about. That's just like... the topping on top of the cake. That's just amazing.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's not something you get to do even as a store owner every day.
No, it's not.
To get to actually experience, like, sit down and talk with one of the people that you know.
There's times when, because when we've gone to the Comics Pro meeting, I've sat down and talked to, like, Matt Kent or...
Totally.
Whoever, and it's really cool. That, like, a couple years ago when we went and Brian Wood remembered me from 7 years before, that was pretty cool.
That's pretty dope.
Stuff like that's just... It's just neat. But Benitez, like, I admire Lady Mechanica, and I've admired his work since Weapon Zero, which was almost 20 years ago now.
Yep.
I've liked his work since then, and because of that, the chance to get to hang out with him, and he's such a chill guy. He was totally chill.
Crazy chill.
The entire weekend.
Super nice, very real.
pretty down to earth. Just, yeah. He liked to do his art and he liked to do sketches. And
when we asked him where he wanted to go to dinner, good. He was like, I don't know, burger or something.
He's like, I don't care. Well, yeah, because we said, hey, do you got any plans for dinner tonight? And he's like, oh, not really. I was like, you want to go out to dinner with us? He's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So and he could have said anything. We would have taken him out. And it was like, we're going
like,
here.
What do you want? He's like, oh, I don't care.
Whatever.
I'm like, all right, well, I think we're going to go here because I think we can get in. He's like, okay. It was cool. Just, mellow as hell. Yeah.
He was very cool.
What about you, Zach?
So that was really cool. But actually, the other thing I really dug, not to cut Zach off.
No,
Zach,
good.
And Zach, I think, can agree with me on this. This is a segue into Zach.
Real quick. Yeah.
But the fact that we have customers that actually went and shopped for us.
Yes.
They brought us stuff.
I was guess. Yeah.
That was awesome.
They show up and they're
like, hey, I noticed that you really liked this picture that I had, or you really like this thing that I know you like.
Yeah.
So I found this for you. We were just generally shopping and I thought, hey, maybe you would like this. So I bought it for you and bought it.
Yep. Same here. Yeah.
I had three people bring me things. I was like, you guys are supposed to be shopping for yourselves and doing your own thing.
Exactly.
But they were kind enough to drop by and bring us, like, you got a really cool Punisher poster.
Oh, yeah. I got
Luke Cage.
Luke Cage.
It was Luke Cage.
I got a huge Luke Cage, a print from this artist that I bought a Punisher from the Bodega before that I really liked. I'm trying to remember the artist's name, but she was really good. She was very popular at the Denver convention. Uh-huh. She does everything in like charcoal and pencils.
Her initials were AMC.
Yeah. And she was great. The Punisher that I have is John Bernthal from the TV show, and then Luke Cage is Luke Cage from the
Netflix show.
But it was awesome, and they just gave it to me.
Yeah.
So, and I was not expecting that on Sunday morning.
The same people gave me a Preacher TV show from the AMC show, the Preacher version.
Oh, wow.
And then the guys, our buddies at Fansets, gave me one of the pins, exclusive pins.
Yep, the Colorado
the
pins.
Show,
yep.
And a Bombshell pin and a Wonder Woman shield pin.
Yep, I got one of those Denver ones. Yeah, it was awesome.
My buddy Ray brought me a Chog.
Yeah,
a glow-in-the-dark chog.
I was jealous of the chog.
Like, really? This is awesome. Like, nope. And it just, it's stuff like that. That was awesome.
Yeah, one from CCP Comics gave me, my girlfriend walked over and saw art she liked, and then at the end of the con, they actually brought me, because she couldn't afford it, they just brought me four of those prints of art.
Just to give her?
Just to give her.
That's cool.
So it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Makes you want to tear up. You're just like,
oh no, I got a little tear
too.
On Sunday, I was like, but it was like 30 minutes into the con, and I'm tired, and I'm like, this is too much emotional stuff right now. The other thing for me, really quickly, is the last couple years, I've been trying. I have a Superman, Death of Superman omnibus, and on that, 3 years ago, I met John Bogdanov, who's one of the artists in that during that series. He did Man of Steel. I went to him to get a signature and to get a little head sketch, but there's no blank space inside the book. So he asked if he could draw on the pages, like the actual outer pages, when you look at the, you know, when you look at the huge hardcover. So he did that, he signed it, and I went, this is really crazy and unique. So last year, I got Dan Jurgens to do one as well. He was one of the other artists. And then this year, Tom Grummet, who did a lot of the Superboy stuff, did a Superboy for me this year. So I just need Jerry Ordway, and I'll have every artist who worked on Death of Superman, their signatures, and a little sketch on my book.
Yeah.
So that's...
You'll know that book, because we talked about it in our one of our prized collections when we talked about our own collections, and this was the book that Zach brought up, and it just keeps growing.
It keeps working out for him.
Yeah,
exactly. So... That's
fantastic.
For me.
Yeah. So all in all, I would say successful con, and thanks so much to everyone that made that.
Thanks, special thanks
con.
To Benitez for being willing to come out and spend that time
absolutely.
At our booth.
Sure, he was fantastic. You know? And if you've not checked out Joe Benitez, check out his stuff wherever you are.
Absolutely.
If you don't have a comic store near you and you're listening to this podcast for some strange reason, you should go ahead and go to joebenitez.com and check him out there.
There you go.
Check out Lady Mechanica. It's excellent work.
Just really quick, a couple things here, and then we'll get into our pick of the week, which will be a lot of fun to talk about. We are going to do something on August 16th for the DC Midnight event.
Oh, yes, we are.
We are planning an event for that right now.
You guys are making me do this, huh?
Yes. We do not have all the details set down. We don't have everything set in stone right now. Mm-hmm. We are talking to DC about some things. We are talking amongst ourselves about what we're going to be doing. We are doing a midnight on August 16th for DC's Metal. The book that's written by Scott Snyder and art by Greg Capullo.
Mr. Greg Capullo.
Yep, and it's going to be, as they say, metal. It's going to be awesome.
And yeah, so we're gonna try to get a midnight release going, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and so keep a lookout on Twitter and Facebook for information on that. Always, last week we took a little hiatus, but this week and going forward until some crazy event happens, we will be doing our midnight stream sale. Would be a bummer.
That would be bummer. Yeah,
we could do it though.
We do meet up every Friday at 6:30.
Six to 8 p.m. on Facebook. Just go there. We do a stream sale. It's really easy to do. It's a lot of fun. It's people really enjoy it. We've heard that people just watch it just for entertainment value,
which is totally fine.
Which is totally cool. So check that out. We also have a book club. It's going to be was it July?
Let's see.
Try to remember what
it
day
is going to be. July 27th.
July 27th, that's right, because last was 29th last week, that's last month. But it's going to be July 27th, and we're going to be reading and talking about Jeff Lemire's Trillium.
That's right.
So, again, we offer that at a discount here if you are local.
Yep.
25% off if you are a walk-in, 30% off if you are a hold slot.
That's right.
So come check us out. If you don't need to buy the book, you can just come talk about Jeff Lemire and comics and stuff if you'd like as well.
Right. I'm really interested to see people's opinions about one.
Me too.
I think that there's a lot to talk about in Trillium. So
absolutely.
Art, including story. So
yes, exactly. So check us out. Remember, always keep checking Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Please, please, please.
For what we're doing.
Yes.
All right. So let's jump into Picks of the Week, or actually, I should say, Pick of the Week.
That's correct. You should
our
say
pick of the week,
our
single pick.
Yep. If people have listened through all these episodes, they know this has happened only.
God bless you if you have, by the way.
A couple of times. But again, we're going to do it. We're all unanimous. Richie, Sean, and I. We all chose.
I can't believe I did this. I can't. I'm sorry. I feel like I need a shower.
No, we love it.
We should make him say it.
Let's do it. Do it, Sean.
Yeah, Batman, what do we pick?
Elmer Fudd.
We did. We picked Batman Elmer Fudd.
I got to give it up. It was awesome. That book was awesome. If you can find a copy, just go buy it.
Yes, good luck.
It's excellent.
Yeah, we just heard from DC today, though, as of this recording, they are going to be doing a second printing.
Oh, right.
So
check out. And even if it is the second printing, guys,
just get it.
Pick it up to read it.
Yep, pick it up. You got to read Batman Elmer Fudd. It is going to be an Eisner winning, or at least nominated for sure.
Absolutely.
Book that they're going to be doing next year.
I think that it was so good that it sparked our podcast, our last podcast. So if you're listening to this right after,
yes,
you'll understand why this was so big for us. But we'll talk a little bit about it, spoiler free, right now. Let's talk about the art. Just because I know that we're going to gloss over that because the writing was so well done.
Sure. I mean, Lee Weeks is fantastic.
The art cannot go unmentioned because Lee Weeks kills it on this.
Yes, he does.
The illustrations, I think, help the jokes land harder.
Yes.
The content of the book has a serious tone to it.
Yes, it does.
And I think it helps create or allows you to accept that seriousness with the artwork, Lee Weeks' artwork. And Sean, you mentioned yourself the perspective scope that he has.
Well, like he's got a really, really interesting perspective on like how he presents his story in the art format of it. Mm-hmm. So it's just the pencils and the way coloring and lighting were used in the panels were just amazing.
Yes.
It was done really well.
Yes.
For it to be like a dark, you know, Looney Tunes Bugs Bunny story, Elmer Fudd. Like, the whole entire cast was in there represented somehow.
Yeah.
Which is what I loved about it.
Agreed. And so then we'll talk about the writing on it.
Again, that is going to be our boy.
So, yeah.
Tom King.
That's why I need to shower.
Yeah. Tom King kills.
Because you guys
it
are all over that guy. I'm surprised
why he is not. I mean, I think he's getting there.
Right. I think with this book too, that people have started saying his name more and more now, and we're finally getting to talk about Tom King the way he should have been talked about.
For me, he's in that echelon. Already for me, he's in that echelon of Jeff Johns, Scott Snyder, Pete Tomasi. Just everything I read from him has been fantastic in some shape or form.
Not one thing that he's done has made me go, eh.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not saying, and they all do different things differently, so I'm not saying that he's like
Jeff
Johns.
No, I wouldn't say that he's like Jeff Johns or Snyder in any form.
No, but I'm saying the quality.
Or Tomasi, for that matter.
I'm saying that he's a starting quarterback for an NFL team, is all I'm saying.
Yes.
He's good enough to be in that saying.
And for this, it's not about, let's say, the continuity of the story. It's not about, you know, where are the real risks taken in this book, because there aren't any real risks here. But the way that you take a concept and then construct that concept to be fresh, even though we're talking about a franchise that has been tied together for 20 years at least?
No, longer, yeah.
Yeah, so the Looney Tunes DC crossover has happened forever.
Yeah, many times.
And they've done it quite a few times.
And not only that, but I would submit that Looney Tunes themselves even know that their franchise has kind of hit their peak of, like, we know what to expect from a Looney Tunes. And I would say you know what to expect from a Batman comic usually as well.
Yes.
And to take those two labels and then build something that's this unique and this fresh, it's incredibly difficult to do.
Sure, yes.
Because even good books that are written, like The Marvin the Martian and Martian Manhunter, have been good, but they were good on an expected level.
Yes.
And I think this takes it one step above that.
Yes. No, I totally agree. And we don't want to get into spoilers because we want you guys to read the book to see what's going on, because we had friends that laughed and said, you guys are nuts, and we had them read it, and both people said at different times, they did not say it at the exact same time, both said brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
They both used the word brilliant, and I think that's what Tom King did with the book. He did something that was brilliant. Like you said, it's not game-changing, it's not Watchmen. I'm not telling you that comics will never be the same after this issue. But what he did was brilliant by taking those two things and how to mesh them together and making it fantastic comic.
It's just straight up enjoyable to read.
Right.
Yes.
So
exactly.
I just the book itself, like I'm not the biggest Batman cheerleader in the world, as we all know.
Correct.
I think his love is ridiculous.
And you're wrong.
I don't understand why people like him as much as they do.
That makes sense.
But I mean, I don't hate the character by any means,
right,
any stretch of the imagination. I think he's definitely got good stories, and he's definitely got stuff you should read.
Absolutely.
And I definitely think this is one of those books that you should get your hands on. You should read it. You should take a look at it, because it is just fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just this plain and simple, well-written piece with good art that's fun.
Yeah. Yes. I have thought about buying it digitally so I can have it on my iPad, because there's not a digital code, just to have it on my iPad so I can read it.
So this, after watching about 6 different people read it, this is how I predict you will read it if you haven't. You will read the first page and you will laugh.
Yep.
You'll go, oh my god, this is amazing, right off the bat on the first page.
Well, this is gonna be funny.
Page and you'll go, oh my god, is that blank? And you'll say, wow. Then you'll notice the artwork.
Yes.
Okay. And about 4 pages in, you're going to be all in.
Yes.
You'll stop laughing and you'll actually start taking the storyline seriously.
Yep.
Until you get to the 6th or 7th page where you're going to be awestruck, and then you'll finish it out just wanting to know. And at the very end, you'll go, that was a really good comic.
That was a really good comic. Yes.
Okay.
And like you said, I think what you said earlier was great, is that there's going to be things in this comic. One of the reasons why we love Old Man Logan is because Mark Miller took something, Wolverine snicking his claws, made it into such a big deal. There are jokes and things that we've all seen, all heard a billion times, but made them into something that were you like, I want this to happen. Oh, it happened.
Right.
That's cool.
Exactly. So. And Looney Tunes is the king of that.
Yes.
Everything you want, when you hear Looney Tunes, you go through a whole plethora of things that you know is going to happen.
Yes. Well, if it's like for you guys, I mean, Looney Tunes, I grew up watching those cartoons all same. The time.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
So every single trope that's in those shows were in the comic.
Right.
Yes.
Like everything you could actually imagine.
Yes.
Oh, I remember this. Oh, I remember that.
Yep.
He touches on all of that.
Yes.
That's what makes it so brilliant. Right.
And like you said, going back to the art, Lee Weeks put stuff in the background mm-hmm. that you have to pay attention mm-hmm. to.
Yes.
Because there are things going on in the background that, because I totally will admit, I didn't catch everything.
Neither did I.
And then people online went, oh, can you believe this is happening in the background?
Right.
And I went, what? And I looked, and it is.
Did you see there's an actual Looney Tune character in there?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Like a standing talking dog or something?
Yeah, exactly. So, it is a fantastic comic. It's a one-shot, which is always cool to get as a one-shot comic. If you go to a store and they still have copies of the first print,
you should probably buy one.
Just buy it right now.
Yeah.
It is one of the hottest things out there. We don't have any more copies. We even got the damages in from our, you know, what was damaged from our initial shipment. We're sold out of that. We have to wait for second prints just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy it on Comixology, you know, if you really want to read it. And you should. You should definitely read it. It's fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's something that I think bridges so many different perspectives. Like I said, Sean, independent reader, usually loved it. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend, who doesn't read comics, loved it.
That's all I want. If you're going to write stories, just write them good.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that this is a good enough story that not just a Batman, Looney Tunes, or DC fan will appreciate.
Correct. You can show this to anyone.
Yes. And that's a good strength there. So
and that is our pick.
Absolutely.
That is a unanimous. And I want to throw out that this is also a Keith pick.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Yeah, that's how unanimous we were.
Unanimous, everybody.
Keith was the person that made me read this book.
Yeah, because Richie wasn't going to read it.
I wasn't going to read it. Absolutely not.
Yep. And then you had the exact same reaction that a lot of people did.
Yes.
And they said, oh, you know, this is silly. But what happened in the book is not... It's not silly. It's brilliant. So,
yes.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Yes, it is. So pick it up.
Now. Right now.
Right now.
Now.
All right. Well, let's get into...
Did you pick it up yet? Jesus.
Let's get into Spinning the Racks.
Spinning the Racks. Da-da-da. 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 Spinning the Racks.
We gotta.
Yes.
Always do this.
It's so,
in this podcast, you just keep doing the same thing over. Yeah.
It's called a segment.
Yeah.
Howard Stern has done the same stuff for 20 years. Sure. It's what you do.
So, can we throw bologna on these?
Sure.
Whatever we're doing. Isn't that what he does?
He does wacky
stuff.
Like those
bologna on women's butts or something like
that? Yeah, he does some wacky stuff.
If you want to bring your girl in here, we'll throw...
No, not my girl, the comics. We're going to throw bologna on the comics.
Oh, okay.
Because they're bologna.
Today,
I like how he just keeps trucking on.
Yes,
every time.
I
love it.
We gotta go. We gotta show. So today's Spinning the Racks, we wanted to talk about, because Marvel's getting ready to do Legacy. We've had some previous episodes where we talked about the state of the comics industry, state of Marvel, the way that some people feel about them. We're not going to get into that tonight again. We're just going to get into the books as of right now, before the Legacy, before whatever kind of thing that they're going to be doing. We haven't had all the full announcements. They're going to be doing some of that at San Diego Comic Con.
We're going to be some of those Generation posters.
Yep. They're doing some of the Generation posters. They're doing some renumbering. They said they're going to be announcing some new creative teams, some new directions for books, that sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So before all that happens, what are some... What are some current Marvel books that we are enjoying right now? Like we said, there has been for a while a little bit of negativity towards them. Some people say, oh, I don't want to read some of their stuff. But they still put out some great stuff, too.
I think that we've been honest on this podcast about what we feel about Marvel as a whole. And we want them to do better.
We want them to, we want to sell... hundreds of Marvel comics.
And I think it's good to have a focus on the publisher themselves and what we feel like they're doing right.
Yes.
Versus the many things that we could say that they're doing wrong.
Yes, exactly.
So this is
going to be a show where we're going to talk about the books that all three of us have on our pull lists, we enjoy reading, mm-hmm. and that we would like to announce, because as of this recording, we're recording this on a Wednesday, And because of the 4th of July weekend, we got our books in late.
That's right.
You know, we got them in on the
Wednesday. I'm proud of us for getting this recording done on this day.
Yeah.
Because I did not, coming in, I didn't think that was a possibility. So well done, guys.
We were tired.
Like, we were hammering through all the shipment this morning.
Yeah, this morning, as soon as I got in, we're going through the shipment.
We kind of mapped it out.
No, we did. Yeah, so. We had a battle plan. It was good. But one of the things I noticed was there was a book that Sean gets and that I get and that you have in your stack. But our pull list is pretty small for it.
Yeah.
And that's going to be Iron Fist.
Yep.
And I love that book. And I went, you know what, we should talk about some of the books that we wish people would, you know, check out more that are coming from Marvel. And what are some books that Sean's reading, I'm reading, you're reading that, you know. So that's kind of where the idea came for this.
Yeah.
You know, if we want to start it off there, we can go from there. But I think all of us get Iron Fist.
Yeah.
The character, we love the basis for the character. Mm-hmm. And this, the art's done by, was it Mike Perkins?
It is Perkins, yep.
Yep. And Ed Breeson's doing the writing. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really cool, old school kung fu comic. So.
Yeah.
Well, I like how it's kind of trying to mix the early days of Iron Fist in with the the Brubaker Fraction?
Brubaker Fraction. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Yes.
So it's kind of, to me, it feels like a mix between both of those, like the early Deadly Hands of Kung Fu type stuff.
Absolutely.
That type of era of Iron Fist, Heroes for Hire, early stuff, and kind of reminds me of that mixed in with the Brubaker Fraction stuff.
Yep.
And that's the feel I get from the comics. That's why I enjoy reading it.
I agree. It's that 100%. Yeah, because when
you can bring me back to that feeling, I'll probably keep reading your comic.
Exactly. And I wasn't an Iron Fist fan until the Brubaker Fraction stuff. And when that happened, I went, oh, he's a fantastically cool character.
Was it the Aja covers back then?
Aja, yeah.
Those are cool.
Yep, and I read that whole run, and then I enjoyed what Joy Trzynski did after they left. I thought that whole run, that whole volume of Iron Fist was a lot of fun. And I just, as a character, it opened my eyes to how cool he can be. And I think that this was another book where... they're doing a really good job with it.
For me, ninjas.
I was going to say that's true.
Have you read all that other stuff?
I've read Fractured. I also like
Fraction Brubaker.
He also read the Carrie Andrews.
Yeah,
which I'm going to.
Yeah, that one.
No one else likes it. I like it a lot.
That's cool.
I'm thinking about giving it another shot. I'm just not a biggest fan of the artwork.
They dedicated a full freaking comic to the Iron Fist punch. It was awesome. I love that comic.
You know, I'll probably just read other stuff.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
But I mean, Mike Perkins. For many years, for like 5 years, he did The Stand. He was doing the adaptation of The Stand at Marvel Comics. Then when he came back, he started doing some different Marvel heroes. He did Carnage, which was one of the last things that he did, and they put him on Iron Fist, and he's a really good artist. And the fit that he has for Iron Fist, I think, is very good.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and then I think, like you guys keep saying, I think that this does harken back to a lot of great stories. I think... it feels like a kung fu movie to me while I read it, and just classic, you know, here's your first trial, and and you have to like keep building up to, and I think that the conclusion of
this arc... Why do this? Even a monkey would die.
Yeah. I think that the conclusion of this arc is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Because of the build-up, and, I've always felt like that's how you write a good Iron Fist story, is a build-up, and then, you know...
Sure. Well, and I really feel like Ed Breeson has read every Iron Fist comic, and I feel like he loves old kung fu movies and brought them together.
And I kind of like it when writers do that kind of stuff, where it seems like they actually do their homework before writing the book, and they don't necessarily copy somebody else's work, but they maybe borrow elements to get the feeling.
Pay homage to the character's self.
I love it when writers do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yes. So. Agreed.
And if you do it well, then I like you even more.
Right.
Absolutely. All right, let's see. What else? We can get into some of the ones that we're all reading Jessica Jones.
I will say I've read the first couple of issues of Jessica Jones, but I am pretty behind.
I mean, I'm not up to date on anything we're talking about, well, I mean, except for
that,
Amy.
But yeah. That's like saying that's anything. DC, right, Marvel, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But this is where Brian Michael Bendis, back in the early days with Ultimate Spider-Man and Alias and Daredevil, those were the three books where he, you know.
Can I just come over from Image and started doing some, they were giving him stuff to, so he could test it out and see how his writing was going to go. And the Alias stuff is the stuff that's still some of my favorite Bendis stuff.
Great.
So I had to pick this book up just because of that.
Yeah, they have the same artist. They have Brian Michael Bendis, and I am getting into one of my picks, which I'll get on into in a minute. I think that this is where Bendis excels. This is the kind of story, this is the kind of character where he's going to excel at it.
Well, it's his character.
It is his character, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So he already knows the history. Yes. Yeah, so he doing research.
He can't this break this character because it's
his. He can, absolutely. Anybody can ruin their own creation. Sure. It happens.
Right.
But no, he does well with what he has here, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's really cool that they got the team back together.
The band back together, bro.
From Alias. Mm-hmm. And they're putting out some new stuff, and the new stuff is good as well.
Everything about this book, I just adore. I really enjoy, especially in the Marvel. One of the things Marvel, I think, does really well is street level superheroing.
Right now?
Yeah.
That to me, that's their, besides Star Wars, which is a monster, and they don't really.
Yes.
We didn't even bring any Star Wars.
No.
But,
well, no, I mean,
yeah,
I think
Star Wars is its own.
It's its own thing. Star Wars is great. If you're not reading it, you should. But I think you're going to see a common thread.
Street level stuff is probably my favorite stuff that they're doing.
But I would argue
all the way around.
I would argue that it's just they do it better even than DC does.
I think you guys like Champions, and that's not street level stuff.
Right. Yeah. Champions is good, but I would just say that.
And I think you liked Nova.
I did like Nova, the 7 issues that it did.
Well, and you guys like Guardians of the Galaxy, too.
No, I don't.
Not the new one, but like Annihilation
and stuff.
The one
from like 10 years ago?
Yeah,
loved it.
Yeah.
Everything since then, I haven't liked it at all.
Well, no, I think Sean just said now what he's loving.
My point is that I don't think that anyone even has Marvel's capability to do that.
DC doesn't really have street level.
Maybe Wildstorm could compete.
Maybe,
but...
Well, Wildstorm is kind of all across the board as far as what they're...
Right.
Because they're aliens and, you know, world universe-spanning type stuff, and then you have a tiny bit of street-level aliens mixed in with that as well, and...
But you're right.
But in this
them
story...
Them dealing with the real world, they have street-level characters.
Yeah, but, like, in this story, we have Jessica Jones, who's currently, like, kind of doing, like, a double agent thing, but also dealing with Luke Cage and their daughter.
Yeah.
And all of her fall from grace from Alias and another crossover that I didn't read. But with that complication involved, that's almost a side part of this comic. It's not even the main focus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's incredibly intriguing, and they just kind of put it in like, yeah, this is life as well. You don't...
Well, yeah, but she hasn't really been involved with a lot of the inner workings of the Avengers much.
Right.
Since, like, what, New Avengers?
Yeah, I was going to say, Bendis was writing Avengers.
That's the last time she's really seen a lot of traction, and then she was kind of, like, bit parts here and there since then.
Right.
Until this came out.
Well, and she also, Jessica Jones also only has, like, a very tiny set of friends, and even though, like, and a lot of superheroes are judgy on her.
She's definitely in the Heroes for Hire
crew. So it's really perfect just to see that kind of realism in the comic, and that's what drives me to buy this every week, or every month, is seeing... getting into that street level style and the real life of a superhero with consequences of every day.
Well, speaking of street level characters, one I still always buy is Daredevil.
Yeah, no, I was gonna. Yeah. Daredevil's on
my list
my
boy,
as well.
And it's been up and down for the last few years where I've liked some arcs and then other arcs I've kind of been like, what are you doing?
Sure.
And why are you doing this?
Yep.
I did not like when he ended up in, was it San Francisco?
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Didn't
stand that stuff. But then he ended up back in Hell's Kitchen again in New York, you know.
There's no reason to take Daredevil out of Hell's Kitchen.
Ever.
Ever. Let's just put that out in the ethos.
That is like, Batman moving to Coast City.
And he could travel to Queens or Jersey or even, or maybe
Bronx, if you want him outside of his car. But only for purposes of Hell Kitchen.
Yeah, he can, like, bounce around a little bit in the surrounding suburbs. It's fine.
He can go to San Francisco for a day to, you know, kick someone's ass that hurt him in Hell's Kitchen.
Maybe he needs a vacation.
Okay.
Well, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he doesn't set up shop.
But then Charles Soule and Ron Garney came on the book. Mm-hmm. And I remember number one coming out, and Sean going, I kind of don't really want to buy this book anymore. I don't want to buy this book.
Right.
I'm hoping that it, you know, I can just say, you know, I have my whole collection now and I'm good. And he read it and he went, oh man, I gotta buy all these Daredevils. and the whole run has been really good so far.
Yeah, it's not, you know, breakout. Fantastic! Everybody needs to read this, but it's been good.
It's been good. It's a back to basics, which I think the character needed. It has elements of everything. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's somebody bringing it back down to a base, bottom line. You know, the stuff we loved about Frank Miller, the stuff we liked about Bendis, the stuff we liked about Brubaker, all that kind of stuff. He brought it back down to that sort of point. And he's doing some other things like it. Like I said, it's not earth-shatteringly. I've never read a Daredevil story like this, but this is good stuff.
Right. And I know that you'll hear us like kind of exclaim, almost in a ridiculous fashion about how great comics can be. But there is something to be said about a solid comic that you can read monthly.
Yep.
Especially with characters that you love. Batman comic does not need to be jaw-dropping for me to enjoy it. I just want to enjoy it. And there's many ways to accomplish that. And some of them are tropes, and it's easy to,
sure,
you know, do, and I accept that. But when you get someone that tries to take risks and they fail, it almost devastates you because you're like, oh no, what, you know. So when Daredevil goes to San Francisco, that's a take. Like, let's shake it up a bit. And it challenges.
He was definitely trying something new. And yeah. I appreciate him for trying something new and going out of the box.
Absolutely.
I just didn't enjoy the story.
But then it doesn't hurt to just go back to the basics at some point and kind of rebuild from there.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's exactly where we're at Daredevil.
Yes.
And it's easy buy for people that enjoy Daredevil.
Yes, I agree. One of my absolute favorite books that is coming, it's only two issues in, I have to talk about it because Defenders. Yes. Because if it continues the quality that issue one and issue two have had, then it is going to be one of my favorite books of the year. One of my top five. Up there with Batman and Superman and that sort of thing. The reason why is because I think that with David Marquez, his art on the book has been outstanding. And Brian Michael Bendis, this is the Bendis of old. This is what you bring Bendis in to do. This is what he's, you know, I enjoyed Secret Invasion, which he headed up 10 years ago, the big Marvel event. Uh-huh. I like some of his Avengers stuff. I've liked, you know, some of his X-Men stuff. I mean, he's a good writer. Right. But where he excels is Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and this Defenders book now with Iron Fist as well. The love that he has for the characters, the love that he has for the crime aspect of it all. Issue number two had two characters show up that I was not expecting at all. I absolutely just geeked out over one of them. We really literally have not seen in years. Showed back up in Defenders number two. The ending of number two teases another character who I love. Uh-huh. So I'm super happy that I know that Defenders number three is coming out next week, that I only have to wait a week to read the next issue of Defenders. I'm really loving that book. If you want to read, you know, a really fun team-up book, beautiful art, I can't recommend that one enough for me.
Excellent.
I still have to read it.
Yeah, I love it. I straight up love it. It's great.
Sliding into more love, I wanted to mention Kingpin. Which kind of took me by surprise. I picked up Kingpin in honesty because I really liked the Kingpin portrayals in The Daredevil on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy that character because he's daunting, and no one, they really pulled that off in the Netflix.
Yes.
Where he had this weird ominous power about him. He wasn't technically superhero, you know, super powered anyway. In this book, Kingpin, it's again very street level. But what caught me almost immediately was the homage to, again, Miller.
Yep.
And his art style,
yes,
as well as the storytelling, very noir and very gritty. Very almost Sin City like stylization. There's a lot of shadow-esque backgrounds,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
with a focus on the main character, highlighting them. He's not proportioned correctly, Kingpin,
mm-hmm,
in this, so it's a lot of grotesque illustration as well, kind of making him bulkier than he should be sometimes. His fist is as big as his head almost.
I can't remember what this artist has worked on before.
Ben Torres?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Because I do like his art. Yeah. I like it in this book, and I think it fits really well.
Yeah, that's
but
what
I just... I can't place where... I know I've seen it before, but I swear to God, I cannot place where I've seen it before.
So, like, that is just...
Yeah, that's pure Frank Miller. There.
Yeah, like, so there's a lot of...
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like,
Sin City.
Yeah, you know? Very, very... And it's about a kind of like a mob mentality of a character that's building his
he's building his brand.
Yeah, he's building his reputation again because he's lost it since, I think, Secret Wars. And then when it was, what was the big one that just happened? Avengers
versus... Is this Ben Torres stuff?
Is this Ben?
No.
Nope. Watch. Okay. What was the big one that just happened? Where the Civil War II.
Yeah.
During Civil War II, he kind of started building back Daredevil. His reputation.
The Daredevil stuff is what I remember him from.
Yeah. So Matthew Rosenberg is the writer of this, and it's about, again, Kingpin trying to build his rep as a public figure, while building his criminal empire back up. And it's very interesting. He's pretending like he's not hiding anything with this reporter, and she's kind of doing like a dossier or an article about him. And
Because he's gonna pay her an exorbitant amount of money,
right.
And she's basically broke and penniless. Yeah.
Well, and she told him that she's not to buy, she's going to be honest about everything, and he said, absolutely, be honest. And then he does all these really, you kind of question whether or not the Kingpin is being legitimate or not. And there's a ton of things that make you question that. So
yeah.
It's been building. I think it's on issue 6 coming out. Will be the 6th issue. I think 5 is out already. So I've enjoyed it every month. And a great pickup for those that like that noir-esque style Sin City reads. If you enjoy Daredevil, I don't think it's a giant leap if you want to go into Kingpin.
No, it's a spinoff off of Daredevil, too.
Yeah, absolutely. All of the... I have a few that are spinoffs of Daredevil because I have Elektra as well.
Sure.
And Elektra would be on my list as well.
Yeah. Elektra was really great.
And I like Elektra, but I think she's on the lower end of the characters I like.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've kind of followed this character. I followed this character as long as I've followed Black Widow. And for whatever reason, no matter how many times Marvel restarts Black Widow titles, I'll read them all.
You'll read them all?
Every single time. I just like that character.
Me too.
I'll read every book that comes out from him.
Me too.
And Elektra's kind of in that same... Even when the stories are a little soft,
right,
and they're not as good as they could be, right, I'll still read them.
Outside of Daredevil's run or Miller's run of Elektra, I'm still wanting... I believe that there is a jaw-dropping, iconic story to be told with Elektra that hasn't been done yet. I'm actually looking forward to one day when the author that finally gets... You know, we figure out that story.
Gotcha.
I think that the character itself is good enough to carry a really interesting arc, and I'm not gonna lie, again, ninjas.
Yeah.
She's, all these ninjas would
it's, I mean she's a badass ninja.
Sharks with freaking lasers on their head too, while you're at it.
I really like ninjas, and she's no exception. She's a great ninja, strong ass evil woman that uses both sexuality and her physique to just wreck fools,
mm-hmm,
and she's kind of been a little hurricane throughout the Marvel local scene, fighting Deadpools and Wolverines and the like. And this is a great story. I think it follows along the lines with the Daredevil. Nothing crazy.
No.
But a good story, a solid story. The artwork is acceptable. It's I'm not gonna.
That's an inch.
Yeah, I'm not gonna.
The artwork is acceptable.
I'm not gonna like say that it's my favorite.
I'm sorry, that was
just yeah. Funny. I'm not gonna say it's my favorite.
It's not crazy like Jim Lee, but it right. tells the story.
But yeah, it's not gonna take me out of the story, which is all I ask.
Your face is acceptable. Yeah.
But Matt Owens is writing a decent story that I think is an easy sell to Elektra fans.
There you go. Very nice. So one of the other books for me, I talked about on the podcast a couple times, I'll bring it up again here, is going to be Punisher. Okay. I think the Punisher book is...
You're reading that one too, right, John?
I started reading it, then I stopped.
Okay.
Yeah, and I really...
At the beginning, you were on top of it.
Yeah. I definitely was.
Well, so yeah, the Punisher, it's still being written by Becky Cloonan.
Yes.
And Becky...
Well, I can't remember why the hell I stopped reading it either.
but here's the thing, is that I'll probably tell you the exact same thing that happened with me, mm-hmm. and why I'm catching up with it now, is the artwork was done by Steve Dillon. Yeah. And he made it to issue number, I believe it was, I think he made it to issue 7. I think it was issue 7, and then he died.
Right.
And the tandem, Becky Cloonan was writing an awesome Punisher story.
Cloonan's an underrated writer, in my opinion. I think she deserves more attention.
I agree. Steve Dillon is the, I think we could say he is the Punisher artist.
Yeah.
And they were kicking. They were.
I might like his work.
Yeah, they were awesome. They were kicking butt, and then when he passed away, it really felt like, I think, to fandom, myself, and I think a little bit to people that the air got sucked out of the book a little bit. Right. Becky Cloonan's still writing it. I'm still really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. The artwork is not as good as Steve Dillon's. Right. They found somebody who's going to be kind of in the same style, but it's not Steve Dillon. It's still really good. If you want to read The Punisher, if you like The Punisher, which I do, mm-hmm. it's still a fantastic book. I'm picking up. I'm starting to read now the stuff that Steve Dillon did not work on. But when he died, it really bummed me out, and I took a break. I still bought The Punisher books. Mm-hmm. I'm catching up now because I love The Punisher anyway. It's pretty hard to mess up The Punisher. And also, I think Becky Cloonan is still writing an awesome Punisher story.
Yes.
I kind of dig her anyway. She's just cool.
But I definitely think that for the creative team, the entire book and all of fandom, when he died, it kind of set it back just a little bit.
Right.
But I think they're getting there. I think they're getting their legs back, and they're going to continue on. So, and check out issue number 4. Check out the letters pages.
Is your letter in there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's where your letter is.
Yeah, my letter that I got, my very first comic book published letter was in there. So.
Nerd.
Exactly. So check that out. But Punisher is awesome.
That is great.
All right. What about...
So I've picked this a couple times, and every time I pick it, you guys look at me like, oh, really? And I wanted to mention it here is Nick Fury is...
I haven't read that at all. I like the covers on it, but I just haven't picked up the book.
Yeah, I think actually you'd really like it. To me, the style it's done in is like a weird 70s gumshoe, half-hour detective story. You know, there's kind of like a Bond-esque story. Okay. He's got all these gadgets. He has a mission that they clearly state at the beginning. He's talking to headquarters, and then it runs through that mission, and then it ends. Every issue is like a tiny mission.
Okay, that's
and if cool. if it had a theme song, it would play at the beginning of their splash page, right? Because they do this weird like splash page,
cool,
and it always has like the name of the episode, if you will,
or the
issue in this case of this,
yeah.
It's just vibrant. The thing is, it's not noir. It's the complete opposite. It's very, I like...
Splashy.
Yeah, super splashy. The panelizing in this book is my favorite.
It's really cool looking. It's
absolutely, and I'm not sure if that's the art or the writer that's doing, like, the breakdown in the panels and stuff.
A bit of both.
But... The page layouts of these books are my favorite part of it. they really just capture your eye and push you to like really enjoy this comic and not let the outside world influence you. You just kind of get sucked into it.
Yeah. You're flipping through and it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's again.
Seems like it's a tiny bit of the tip of the hat to Steranko.
Steranko is definitely an influence in this.
Yes.
And I don't think they're shy about that.
No, it looks like that's kind of their mandate.
Yes. I want to shout out to Rachel Rosenberg, who's the colorist on this book.
Colors are cool.
Because all of the colors are risky, and I love it. It's the same thing with Hi-Fi in Zero Year of Batman New 52 run. Yep. Where they changed the colors because they kind of wanted to do a Dark Knight Returns feel, but instead of the black background, they did pink and purple.
Yeah.
And it just changes the dynamic of the comic in its entirety, and that's what happens with the colors in this book. They just carry... you read a story in the same fashion, you can totally see all of this, the palette being a completely like gray and black kind of thing, but instead they're using teal and pink. It's really interesting, and as the story progresses, there's still an overarching story as well with Hydra and Nick Fury, but it's definitely Bond-esque. This number three is what the one we're looking at. It's a train heist, and he has to keep a really bad man alive. And there's five assassins on the train, and he has to capture all of them and make sure he doesn't die. And again, it all wraps itself up in a nice, neatly done package by the end of the comic. So you can pick up any one of them and read them as a story and be fine. But there is an arcing story as well.
Is this James Robinson?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is it James Robinson writing it?
I believe so.
Let me see.
James Robinson's writing
it. Yeah, well, okay.
Oh, I should be reading
I should be reading this, too.
So there you go.
So,
I like Jimmy Robinson.
I like James Robinson a lot, too. So
it took me by
check me as somebody who will be picking it up.
It took me by surprise. I love everything about it. It's super fresh compared to everything I'm reading in Marvel. And I think it's kind of flying under the radar because of that.
Yeah, it flew under my radar. So.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was writing it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Sean, do you have another?
I don't.
Okay. One of the ones that Sean mentioned earlier is going to be Champions for me. Mark Waid, Humberto Ramos are the creators on this book. And Mark Waid has already come out and said that this is his homage love letter to the new Teen Titans from the 80s. It's a bunch of teenage superheroes getting together and having superhero drama, which is what the new Teen Titans was.
With your pick and the pick that I'll choose next, I want to say that the thing that I think about these two books are that they remind me of what Rebirth is doing as a whole in the DC universe. This Champions, even though they're all brand new characters, really dive into the core of the characters themselves and kind of fit a archetype, and bring you back to stories from the past and really kind of click on that and then build upon that into something new.
Yes, they're taking new characters but using old school methods and old school kind of things that we love about superhero comics, that soap opera drama, if you want to call it that, and like you said, taking the new but continuing on with that. They're not saying, oh, we can't go back to that. And Mark Waid, who, we all know Mark Waid, he's a fantastic writer.
Uh-huh.
But reading this, definitely you can feel that he is doing, he's not ripping it off or doing it exactly, word for word. But he's doing the same kind of thing where he's like, hey, these guys are going to have a barbecue and they're going to talk about their problems. Uh-huh. That hasn't happened since, for a long time. Claremont X-Men, New Teen Titans, whatever kind of analogy you want to harken back to the past, it's going to be that old school... young superheroes trying to figure out what they're doing and doing it in a way that doesn't have to always be a 6-issue arc of find bad guy, destroy him, here's a trade.
And it's going to be destroyed type scenarios.
No, it is sometimes, sometimes there's feelings for each other on the team, there's not feelings for others on the teams, there's all that fun as, we say soap opera
stuff. It's the same reason why you would enjoy... the Power Rangers or, you know, something like that. When you bring in the team elements, the relationships between the inner circle are just as important as the situations on the outer circle.
Yes.
And how exactly. they accomplish that within, you know.
Exactly.
Those are easy stories to dive into. And if I can bump off of you from that,
sure.
I'll slide into my X-Men pick.
Yep.
So I'm picking up X-Men Blue every week, and I've read all the X-Men stuff, and I would say that X-Men Blue is my absolute favorite.
Nice.
X-Men Blue, to me, harkens back to the original one a little bit more. Simple, I think mostly because they can use the characters more.
Sure.
They have Beast, they have Jean Grey, they have the old Cyclops, you know, and it's, to me, it's a little more original X-Men. And I love X-Men, and I really like X-Men when they're simple. But X-Men kind of lend themselves to a overly complicated story arcs, and that's okay because they should be written in any way they can be, and I think they're good for that. It's just not my cup of tea.
Sure.
I like a very simple X-Men, and this really gives that to me.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that I do miss Wolverine. I think he's a fantastic character.
Yes.
And I know that because of certain Marvel commitments, they've kind of removed Wolverine from the thing and kind of yes. added Old Man Logan to kind of fit that palette, and that just doesn't work for me. Old Man Logan is not Wolverine to me.
Me either.
And in Blue, they get around it by showing off Jimmy Hudson, who is Wolverine's son from
the
Ultimate X-Men.
Yeah.
So they to me, that's a way fresher take, and I'm hoping that they'll tie that into getting him into a suit.
Gotcha.
And then I'll have my matchy-matchy X-Men in a simplified form with a Wolverine, and I'll be 100% in. The art on this, again, is not my favorite. It does carry the story fine. It's not so terrible that I would say don't pick it up, but Colin Bunn is...
Oh, yeah.
He's a good
writer. Yeah, he's a really great writer. And
that's great.
And I haven't met him. Is he nice?
He's a nice guy. He's really cool.
Yeah. So, and he, you know, he's doing, I think, the exact same thing that Gold is doing.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to pull from the original stories, like we said.
Yes. Yep.
And building, using that as a base to kind of jump off of into new arcs. The only difference being that Blue can use characters that have had way too much story kind of put into them.
Sure.
And they can bypass all of that by using these all new X-Men that came from a past and haven't had to go through the Phoenix Saga or
and all that.
House of M. They don't have to do any of that. They're just kind of like, oh yeah, we're X-Men, and they kind of get to have fun.
Sure. Yeah. No,
where X-Men Gold still has to kind of deal with that situation. Kitty Pryde's
because they're harkening back to the
jaded.
Yeah,
well, they're harkening back to the character. To the basis of the people who love Cyclops, Kitty Pryde,
right.
Storm. Like if that's your kind of X-Men, that's your book.
I don't need my Cyclops angsty, and he's not in this, and I enjoy that.
No. So, I agree. I definitely think that they're doing a good job with the X-Men books right now. If you were an X-Men fan...
Yeah, that's not to say that Gold is not fantastic, because I do read it every week, but if I were to pick one, I would say...
If you're an X-Men fan like I am, I pick it all up, but they all hit different things. X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold are going to be your two main ones, but you're right. Half the people who buy X-Men Blue go, man, I like Blue way better than Gold. Mm-hmm. And then there's another half, I think it's the exact same amount. It says, man, Gold's better than Blue.
Right.
So it's definitely a preference thing, but I think that's a good thing to do.
I feel like that happened when they did X-Men Gold and Blue the first time.
Yes.
So. It completely happened that way.
Exactly. So, and then the other offshoot books that the X-Men books are doing, if you really enjoy the darker side, Wolverine, Sabretooth, Domino, you can get Weapon X.
Right.
If you want to do some more of the teenager stuff, you got Generation X.
Yeah.
So I think they're doing a good job with opening that up and making that more inclusive to way more people.
Right.
If you're an X-Men fanatic like I am, you get it all, you enjoy it all in some aspect.
Right.
But like you said, if you're like, oh, I just want to read about kind of a simpler X-Men, you get Blue. Oh, I want to see all that 70s, 80s craziness, X-Men Gold.
Yeah.
If you just want to read about Cable and how cool he is, you can pick up the Cable book.
Yep.
So
that's what Cable's there for.
Which I think is a good thing that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they need to continue to do that.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, guys, I think we gave out some good suggestions here tonight.
Yeah, we just spit a ton of Marvel love.
Absolutely. Right there. So, if you're not picking up any of these,
that's probably the
give
most amount of good
Marvel hugs and kisses.
Yeah, that was a lot of Marvel love for us.
Give some of these a try. I will tell you, I'm probably going to pick up those Nick Furies.
I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts.
I probably need to read it. It's Jimmy Robinson.
I love James Robinson, and flipping through it, you're right. The art and stuff looks really cool. So, you even converted one of your fellow podcasters here. So, so join us next week. We'll be back with our next episode.
Oh, and I know that you're like, hey, guys, this is 50. We said we were going to do this live. Well, I'm going to give it up to James Maxwell, listener of ours. We were trying to figure out how we were going to do this. We knew that we were going to, you know, maybe do an offshoot and just go to 51 or something like that. Yeah. And he said, why don't you guys do an annual, like a comic book?
Exactly.
And brilliant, James. It is brilliant. That's exactly what we're going
to
do.
So we're going to announce an annual. We're going to do something wacky, fun, crazy.
We just want to prepare for it and make it good and kind of present you guys
stuff
with something
like
that's
49.
It's not 49. And everyone that's listening is going to laugh because they'll have listened to 49 and then they're going to listen to 50 and be like, why does he think it's... But anyway.
I don't even know what day it is.
I know you don't.
But anyway.
It's clear.
So again, we'll have more announcements on that stuff coming up.
So
again, check everything.
Just be prepared. We'll announce the annual. We have actually a really cool idea.
Yes.
I think you guys will really enjoy it.
Yep.
It will be interactive.
Yes.
And we'll need your help for it.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Be prepared.
100%. All right. So until next week, we will see you. Enjoy your comics and see us around social media and the store.
Go Marvel.